What should have been a fairy tale wedding turns out to have been the worst wedding ever. The kind of thing that eventually makes its way to Facebook and even the Huffington Post. Someone no doubt got a video of it that will be leaked to TMZ and Entertainment Tonight, and it just becomes awful. It should have been a fairy tale wedding, I say, because the king's son was getting married, and there's no wedding like a royal wedding. Now, whether the royal wedding you remember best is Grace Kelly's marriage to Prince Rainier of Monaco, or Lady Diana Spencer's wedding to Charles, Prince of Wales, or Kate Middleton's marriage to Prince William, a royal wedding is always an elaborate affair. The great National Cathedral is spit-shined from top to bottom. The old archbishop is hauled out to preside at the nuptials, and reigning monarchs from around the world all attend in their royal finery. Well, the same was true for royal weddings in the first century, and maybe more so, because everybody who was anybody would receive an invitation to the royal wedding. Political cronies, client kings, captains of industry, even members of the loyal opposition. As one writer notes, the guest list had much less to do with friendship and much more to do with politics. You got invited because of your status and your usefulness to the ruler. Now, unlike with modern weddings, wherein we generally send out a save the date card, this invitation came without a specific date. The king would simply let the guests know when it was time to come to the wedding. And so, when the big day finally arrived, the king sent out members of his staff to round up everyone who had received an invitation and bring them to the wedding. Only nobody answered the door when staff knocked. Nobody answered the phone when the royal staff called. Nobody responded when members of the royal staff sent text messages and tweets, which was kind of odd since the limousines that the king sent out to pick up guests all bore the royal standard, and caller ID clearly indicated that the phone call was coming from the royal palace. I mean, it's not like people to just ignore the engraved invitation sent on 110-pound cranes premium cardstock, all embossed with the king's own monogram, but well, I guess stuff happens and people refused to come. So the king tried again, sending other members of the royal staff to tell those who had been invited that everything was ready, that the king had spared no expense in the catering department, that the caterers were in fact preparing the finest imaginable oxen and fatted calf, and the reception band had just swept the Grammys. It was going to be the wedding of the century. The time had come. Come to the wedding banquet. Meh, was the response. Or that at least was the polite response. In fact, most of the guests treated the invitation as a joke. They simply laughed at it. Sorry, replied one guest, but I've got to go to my farm, got to see a man about a horse, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Oh, I'd love to, said another guest, but the market has just erased all of this year's gains. I've got to go back to the office to calm investor fears. The wedding is this weekend, said a third guest. Gosh, I hate that I just booked my tickets for the American League Championship Series. No can do, But do tell the prince I send my regards and wish him good luck for me. Well, as embarrassing as all of that was, the staff members had those interviews got off easy. The other staffers got arrested, got beaten up, and were killed just because they tried to get some people to come to a wedding. I can only hope they had good life insurance. So I suppose it should come as no surprise that the king was enraged. I mean, here he was just trying to give his son and heir a proper wedding, and nobody but nobody had the decency to show up. And so, rather than writing to Miss Manners for advice, the king sent a couple of infantry companies, accompanied by some armored tank divisions, to destroy these murderers, these ingrates, these people he had thought would want to come to his son's wedding, but no, we have better things to do, and destroyed their city. Never mind that it was also the king's city, but he was going to teach these people a lesson they wouldn't soon forget. Now that might seem like a pretty disproportionate response to people like you and me. We're just talking about skipping a wedding, after all. I mean, maybe Bed Bath & Beyond was closed that day and nobody could get proper gifts. I don't know. But nobody has ever claimed that parables make much sense, much less that they are fair. Remember that in last week's parable, the tenants who leased the king's vineyard thought that by killing the king's son, they would receive the inheritance. That doesn't make sense. And in return for the murder of his son, the audience suggested to Jesus, who posed the parable, that the king ought to put those wretches to a miserable death and a lease out of the vineyard to other tenants who would give the king what was his. Which, you know, maybe wasn't entirely fair, but it was perfectly understandable. Now, by this point in the parable, the body count is high enough to warrant you an involvement. But things go from being merely violent to simply bizarre. For acting as if nothing out of the ordinary has happened, the king announces to the remaining staff that the show must go on, that the wedding is going to go on exactly as planned. He simply adds the note that those who were invited were not worthy. I guess not. But did you really have to kill them on that account? I mean, whatever happened to being gracious and merciful? I mean, you are the king after all. Why not haul them into your courts? Why not sit down and have a conversation about it? Send them to prison if you want, but do you have to kill them? It's just strange. So the king sent the surviving members of staff, saying to them, go out into the main streets, into the highways and the byways, and invite everyone you find to come to the banquet. Just bizarre, right? I mean, you kill the people who were initially considered worthy to come, when in fact they weren't really worthy, but then you just invite everybody and their mama to come, despite the fact that these people weren't worthy of a first round bid? I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. It isn't fair. But the staff did as they were told. They went out into the main streets, into the highways and the byways, and they gathered up all the people they could find, both good and bad, or more literally, both good and evil, which meant this was going to be a pretty interesting party. I don't know about you, but when I get invited to a party, I hope the bad people are also invited because it means it's going to be fun. Not just pin the tail on the donkey and punch, but something really exciting, like when those Israelites all rose up to revel, which is, I think, the Old Testament's nice way of saying it got like the Playboy Mansion, only we can't tell you. So here we are, good and bad, the fun people and the not so fun people, the people who know what to wear and what not to wear. I mean, talk about party crashers. But the king gets his wish. The wedding hall was filled with guests. Now, if this were the end of the story, and some scholars argue that it is, we might could salvage a grace note, a redeeming note in this otherwise strange and violent parable. We could redeem this parable by saying, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a wedding banquet that ended up being attended by all sorts of surprising people. People who, frankly, hadn't planned on being there, hadn't even received a first-round invitation, but who came because the king wanted them to come. If this were the end of the story, that might be the saving grace. That point, in fact, kind of fits with the historical context in which Matthew is writing this story, putting it on the lips of Jesus. Because Matthew is speaking about, and Jesus is speaking to, the chief priests and the Pharisees, who were the leaders of Jesus' own religion, who had apparently turned down all of God's invitation to join the great banquet simply because they had better things to do, or at least thought they knew how to throw a party better than God. So God decided that if his own people weren't that interested in coming to his party, then he'd issue an open invitation to everybody, to good and bad, to people that his own people might not have considered worthy, and then the wedding hall would be full and God would be happy. The only problem is the story doesn't end there. This isn't an everyone lived happily ever after kind of story. Because we don't all do the chicken dance and eat wedding cake and throw rice at the bride and groom and watch them drive off into the sunset, tin cans streaming behind the rented convertible. That ending doesn't happen because when the king came in to see his wedding guests, he noticed a man somewhere back in the corner who was not wearing a wedding robe. "Friend," he said to the man in a tone that communicated that the man was anything but a friend, "how did you get in here wearing that?" Now, I'm guessing that a few hours previously, this man was probably minding his own business when he was approached by a man in a dark suit, wearing sunglasses, earpiece in his ear, flashed a badge and said, "Would you like to come to the wedding of the king's son?" To which the man probably said, "Sure, why not? I've not got anything better to do today." I mean, there isn't exactly time to shop at Al's formal wedding robes and then show up at the party. Nevertheless, the king asks him, "How did you get in here without a wedding robe?" And the man was speechless. Yeah. And what kind of a question is that? Had he thought about it, had he been given a little more time, he probably would have explained that a few hours earlier he was minding his own business when he was approached by a man in a dark suit and sunglasses, earpiece in his ear, flashing badge, blah, 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 blah. But he didn't have time to explain that. He couldn't think quickly on the spot. He was just overwhelmed by the strangeness of the question. So the king called over the bouncers and had the man bound hand and foot and thrown out. Thrown out not just out of the party, not just outside the palace gates, and not just into the streets. He had the man thrown out into the outer darkness, where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. Jeez, just because the guy doesn't meet the dress code? So you're probably wondering, what does this story mean? Friends, let me tell you, I don't have a clue. But like I said, not every parable of Jesus makes sense, and nor is everything always fair. But isn't that what grace is like? Maybe God's grace is like that. It doesn't make sense, and it most certainly isn't fair. For none of us is worthy of God's love, God's favor on our own merits, no matter how good we are or how hard we try, or even if we run out and buy a robe. Grace simply means receiving an invitation to God's banquet, whether we are good or bad. Grace means that God wants desperately for us to be at God's table, enjoying God's presence at God's party. And so when the invitation comes, friends, we need to recognize it for what it is. We make light of it or ignore it at our own peril. And we've always got to be ready for the invitation to arrive. For many are called, but few are chosen. Thanks be to God, then, that grace